Well, good evening, and thanks for coming out and helping us have this conversation with you. Like Jackson, I'm a little bit nervous, but I tend to show it a little differently, so I'm going to ask for your help. I want to tell you a story about integrating a social group and also a story about putting your life and limb on the line for something in which you believe, and then last but not least, also about confronting bias and actually seeing justice rendered on that. Got to make a first few disclaimers. I am a Southerner, so raised in Charlotte, North Carolina, all that Southern yes, ma'am, yes, sir stuff that doesn't go over too well here in Washington, D.C., but I do that. The second is I'm a wonk, and I think you may say, how wonky is he? Well, if you look at those bios, you'll see mine's about twice as long as everyone else. I didn't plan it that way, but it worked out that way. So with that as a backdrop, let me take you to the first part about integrating social groups. There was a time of change in my life, about the second grade, and three big changes going on. First, my mom is getting married. And this is a big thing for me because I didn't know my birth father, and she, in fact, was getting married in our house. So there was a lot of change going on, a new stepfather coming in. Second is busing was going on in the area. So I was going from being a second grader at a predominantly black school to a third grader at a predominantly white school. And then the third change is we were moving. So we moved from our old neighborhood, which Double Oaks in Charlotte, North Carolina. I don't know if you know it, but at the time, my mom's favorite clothing store for us was the trunk of the local hustler's car, where you drive up and open the trunk, and she'd look at me, you need a red suit, you know, $5, here comes a red suit, you know. Guess it's, hey, my man, there you go. You know, so, but with my new stepfather, we had economic wealth, so we're moving out to the suburbs. And this is a pretty good thing. We're out in the suburbs, and in my typical wonky state, the first summer I spent it on the front porch reading the dictionary. Abeyance, state of inactivity. Ooh, cool. Aleatory, of related to chance. I mean, this is awesome stuff. And the way I learned is I read things, and then I try it. So just so happened in our neighborhood that we had two groups in this new neighborhood. There were the athletes and the thugs. And just so you know, at that time I was probably about 5 feet tall and really small. I integrated the neighborhood because I was the wonk and the geek. They didn't have that when I went there. So the thing that happened over time as I grew up, the athletes kind of took stewardship of me. They said, hey, Chris is pretty smart. We kind of like him. And what they would do is they'd make you go and play sports with big athletes. So little guys trying to tackle big guys like 6 feet tall, you know. So, and this actually helped a lot because it built my self-confidence. I learned to tackle big people. And all that was relevant because I was starting to read about football. Joe Paterno, Errol Parseghian, Notre Dame. So I decided I wanted to play. So coming into the eighth grade, 5 feet tall, 98 pounds, went to my Southern mom, who was about 5'9", 135, and looked up at her and said, I want to play football. She looked at me, she said, nah, you're too small, you'll get hurt. But I persisted. So every day, I'd go back. I want to play football. You're too small, you'll get hurt. I want to play football, too small, you'll get hurt. Now, I don't know what you know about Southern moms, but you know, my mom was raised in Chesterfield, South Carolina. She was one of 11 kids. And they teach them martial arts that are deadly. Like ear foo yi, where if you don't listen, they grab your ear and twist it. And you can imagine a little shorter, and they lift you up and take you where they want you to go. Or mao fei yu, where if you're sassy, she'll take her long, slender fingers and pinch your lips. And then if you try to resist, she'll twist. Very effective techniques. But I still persisted. And so finally, I was pretty exasperated. So on a Saturday, I got up early in the morning, went to my mom. I said, if you don't let me play football, I'm going to go get underneath the bed, and I'm not coming out. She looked at me like I was crazy, and she laughed. She said, oh, you'll come out, even if there's nothing to eat, but you'll come out. So I went and got under the bed. She comes around a little later. It's breakfast. She lifts up the sheet, looks under there, says, come on, eat breakfast. Not coming out. She goes about her business. While she's gone, I sneak out, use the restroom, and go back under the bed. She comes back for lunch. Come on, eat lunch. Not coming out. Now, in the back of my mind, I'm thinking, I know what my mom can do to me. Because, you know, corporal punishment is no stranger to Southern moms. So I'm going to stick with it. So she comes back for dinner, and I'm feeling that this is the penultimate moment here. Lifts up the sheet, looks underneath. Come out and eat dinner. Not coming out. Sheet goes down, but she doesn't leave. So I'm thinking, my mom's going to pick the spit off and beat the crap out of me. Lifts up the sheet, looks, says, okay, you can play. I'm ecstatic. You know, this is a great win for me. So I crawl out of the bed. Somewhere in the back of my mind, I'm thinking, maybe she's tricking me so she can beat me easier without picking up the bed. But run into the kitchen. You know, I'm pretty excited about this whole thing, and she's making dinner. I'm like, hey, Mom, how do you think I'll do? She looks at me. She says, son, anything you do athletically, you'll do on your own. Your father didn't have an athletic bone in his body, and I don't either. Walks around the partition from the kitchen, goes into the front room, picks up a picture book, reaches into the back of the picture book, pulls out a small picture. There's a guy, drops it up on the counter, and she walks in the kitchen and says, that's your father. I'll tell you three things. One, he's really smart. Two, he's a really good dresser. And three, don't marry anyone from Cleveland, Ohio, because I understand that's where he lives. You might be marrying your sister. So, now, I regret not asking more questions about that then, but I'm thinking about football then. I'm stoked. So, eighth grade, I get to go out to play football. Coach Bratton, I make the eighth grade team, and I'm excited. Yeah, I, like, read all these books. I knew all these plays, and I was now the third-string quarterback and fourth-string running back for the Ranson Junior High School Raiders. So, I'm pretty stoked. I work out, go to ninth grade year. Coach Rhodes, go out for the team. Feeling pretty good about it. Put up the list on the wall. I look at it. I'm not on the list. I've been cut. Now, I would have let that go, but some of my friends run up to me. They say, Chris, we think you were better than some of those guys they kept. So I'm emboldened by this. I go over to Coach Rhodes. Coach Rhodes, I think I'm better than some of those guys you kept. Why'd you cut me? Coach Rhodes looks at me and says, Chris, you're too small. You get hurt. Go up to high school and work on academics or something, but, you know, don't forget about football. Well, Coach Rhodes might as well have lit a fire under a gasoline can. Because you can, like, cue the Rocky music, folks. I start running every day and running around the neighborhood. I'm doing wind sprints. In fact, my ex-wife, who lived a few doors up, they said they would watch me sprint at night, and then I'd lie down because I was so tired in the driveway of the place across from them, and they thought I was a vampire. He said, this guy must be a vampire. So I'm running. I'm doing all these things. My mom buys plastic weights, and I happen to be running one day, and this guy named Sam, who's an ex-boxer, sees me. He says, little man. You know, I see you running all the time. What are you up to? And I tell him my story. And Sam just happens to have these weights that he built with railroad. He built a weight press bench in the backyard with railroad ties, and he uses railroad wheels to lift. So Sam introduces me to weight training. So needless to say, I get to high school, 10th grade year, go out for the junior varsity. I've grown from 5 feet and 98 pounds to 5'5 and 106. And I made the junior varsity to high school, North Mecklenburg, Southwestern 4A school, so I'm feeling pretty good. 11th grade, this is the pivotal year. 11th grade, I'm now up to 5'6 and 116. My friend Bobby says, you know, Chris, we could play junior varsity and we're guaranteed to start. Or you could go for the varsity and you could get cut. I go for the varsity. It comes down to one day, and two things happen. First is there's this drill called bull in the ring, where someone stands in the middle and then they point to someone standing on the perimeter about 20 yards away, and you're supposed to run and collide. Donnie Hall points to me. Donnie's a starting defensive end, about 5'9", 162 pounds. And he doesn't like me. And he probably takes me pretty light and says, come on. And I run, and I hit Donnie, and he goes up in the air and spreads his arm out, lands flat on his back, and everyone in the camp just looking. They start making a lot of noise. Oh, what's this guy? This is great. That's the morning session. Afternoon, Coach Leroy Holden, who's an awesome coach, and he's so energetic, he said, if you hustle and hit for me, you're going to play football. So we do this drill called goal line drill. A little defensive back behind the goal line, defensive lineman or linebacker 20 yards away. You lie down, linebacker has the ball, defense man, you blow the whistle, you get up, you're supposed to tackle them before they get to the goal line. First guy, Greg Hutzel, 208 pounds, 6'2". Greg runs. I hit him. It was a good lick. Didn't bring him down. But they said, good lick, good lick. Next guy, Arthur Davis, 5'10", 240 pounds. I hit Arthur and put him down, and everyone went crazy. And I don't know what you know about defensive players, but they're like packs of wolves. I mean, this is just like everyone's animated, and they're looking down there, and I made the varsity team. And went on from there to actually grow to 5'7 and 124 pounds. Not only did I make the varsity my senior year, but I was a starter. And they said I was the smallest starter in the Southwestern 4A. But this story comes to an end because the way high school works is they put you on the bus after practice if you don't have a car, and you go back to the junior high school. And they pick up the junior high school folks, and then they take you home. Well, it just so happened they went back to Ranson Junior High School, and I got off the bus, and I'm talking to some folks. And Coach Rhodes walks up to me, and he looks at me. He says, "What are you doing here?" And one of my friends is standing near me, and in my mind, I'm experimenting with this expletive-deleted tirade to say to Coach Rhodes, but I can't say anything. Nothing comes out. But my friend says, "Hey, you haven't heard? He's the starting defensive back for the varsity at North Mech." Coach Rose's mouth drops wide open. He can't believe it. And that is how I actually had to confront this bias. And to this day, I don't know whether I should hate Coach Rose or love Coach Rose. But I know I will never forget him. Thank you.